Is anybody else still full from Thanksgiving dinner? Did anyone strain their arms carrying any heavy shopping bags on Black Friday, the busiest shopping day of the year yesterday? Not 2 days ago? No, okay. Did you all shop online? The packages will be arriving soon. This is a time of year of celebration and feasting. And it's also a time of year where we think about gratitude for all that we have and spend time considering those who are not as fortunate as we are, who live in poverty. Some of the people in the world don't eat as much food in 1 week as many of us ate in one meal on Thanksgiving. Half the world, nearly 3 billion people, live on less than $2.50 a day. 1.3 billion have no access to clean water. 3 billion have no access to sanitation. 2 billion no access to electricity. So it's no surprise that Miss Famine didn't understand about Mr. Feast's running water. We live in comfort, in safe homes, with that clean water flowing from our taps, electricity running our lights and appliances, heating systems keeping us warm. It's hard to look at this reality, to wonder about how our daily choices might inadvertently somehow contribute to this global inequality. And I invite us not to think about guilt, but to think about conscience. The Reverend Victoria Safford says, "The whining of guilt, which leads nowhere, is not the same song as the calling of conscience." On Sunday mornings and at other times, we gather in this congregation to listen for that call together, to discern together its implications for our lives, for our own households. We gather to encourage each other and inspire each other when that call to conscience sounds too hard, too harsh, too demanding, or too difficult. And we gather together to press each other further when it sounds too easy or convenient or simplistic. We want our complacency challenged, disrupted, ruptured. We don't want to live in the happy city of denial, Reverend Safford tells us. But you know, it's not really a happy city of denial, is it? Even as we're surrounded by comforts and entertainments, many of us still hunger for something that's missing. We could hear that in Mr. Feast. We're bombarded with advertising designed to convince us that buying a product or spending money for an experience will fill those voids that we feel. Donello Meadows has written a book called Beyond Limits and says, people don't need enormous cars. They need respect. They don't need closets full of clothes. They need to feel attractive, and they need excitement and variety and beauty. People don't need electronic equipment. They need something worthwhile to do with their lives. People need identity, community, challenge, acknowledgement, love, and joy. To try to fill these needs with material things is to set up an unquenchable appetite for false solutions to real and never satisfied problems. Here ends the quote. So we're creating this cycle where we keep trying to get satisfaction from things that will never give us satisfaction. It's like trying to feed our hunger for nutritious food by eating cotton candy all the time. Pleasant for a second, but there's really nothing there. Benjamin Barber, in A Place for Us, says that markets flatter our solitary egos but leave our yearnings for community unsatisfied. They advance individualistic, not social goals, and they encourage us to speak the language of I want, not we need. So, of course, the problem is if everyone's focused on I want, it's just not sustainable. David Corton has written a book called The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community, where he says that we're at this time that he calls a perfect storm of crises. Climate change, peak oil, meaning that we're about to have less oil available to us no matter where we keep looking, and financial crisis. So that this is causing this unbalanced situation, which is going to lead to major changes to the economic and social structure. And so he says that this is an opportunity, saying that the old economy of greed and dominion is dying. A new economy of life and partnership is struggling to be born. The outcome is ours to choose. So he's warning us about difficult times ahead if we continue to follow our same paths. But of course, there are difficult times already for half the people of the world, those people living on less than $2.50 a day. Martin Luther King said, "I have the audacity to believe that people everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits." Now, this, of course, is a dream that we share as Unitarian Universalists, articulated in our seven principles, and we hear how the work of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee is making this dream come true. We heard it in our stories of hope. And as we saw in the different size pie pieces, some people living in poverty in terms of material goods live in prosperity in terms of emotional connection. And I witnessed this a few years ago when I traveled to Nicaragua and El Salvador on a service trip. There was a sense of joyful community and a natural desire to share what little resources these people had. I found simplicity, family, real community, and a very profound level of hospitality. Martin Luther King also said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." So, of course, we would all prefer to live comfortable lives, trusting that all the other people in the world are also living comfortable lives, trusting that no one is oppressed or deprived for us to be well off. We want to help. We want to share our abundance and our expertise to help others. There's a story of wanting to help, made famous by Aesop, about a fox and a stork. A fox, everyone knows a fox looks like this, and a stork like this. So the fox invited the stork to dinner and set a beautiful table very much like this and made a delicious stew and poured it in a nice, pretty plate like this, kind of a deep plate to hold the stew, and was eating it and noticed that the stork wasn't really eating anything. Can you imagine why? If you were a stork with a long beak like this, it was just tap, 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 tap. You couldn't get anything out of this shallow dish. And the fox said, "Well, thanks for coming to dinner, but it didn't seem like you liked my stew very much." And the stork thought, "This fox is not very bright." So the stork invited the fox to dinner the next night and made a delicious fish stew and poured it to serve it in these wonderful vessels, which was very easy for the stork to just stick his long beak in there and eat the delicious stew. But can you imagine the fox with this kind of snout? It wouldn't fit in the glass. And then the fox realized, "Oh, I wasn't paying very much attention to my guest, the stork, last night." And he apologized, and the stork was grateful and poured the fish stew into a nice, shallow plate, and the fox gobbled it up. So they learned something from each other. And that is the model that the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee uses. They call it eye-to-eye partnerships, one that offers respect and mutuality, appreciates diversity, gives mutual support, and is open to mutual teaching and learning. It's not this idea that they come in with knowing what is best. They realize that people nearest the issue know what they need and that they should determine how to achieve their goals. So the UUSC certainly does offer expertise and, in many cases, resources, and in turn, they learn and are nourished by working with these people all over the world. The third story that we heard in the Stories of Hope was from Ecuador, from the Mi Cometa Movimiento, the My Kite Movement. That's a community group in this low-income neighborhood of Guasmo Sur. And this name, My Kite Movement, brings to mind bright kites flying high in the sky, moving together in a joyful dance of color and tails. And I imagine people picturing this name, My Kite, picturing My Kite flying ever higher. And over the years, they've developed all kinds of social services, a Head Start-type program for preschoolers, an after-school enrichment program, a woman-led housing construction co-op, micro-enterprise loan programs, music programs, computer programs, and most of these programs are headed up by women and youth. And we heard about their successful campaign around water. When the people in the neighborhood weren't getting water, they were able to organize not only in their neighborhood, but connect with others and travel around the country. With Carolina, we heard about Carolina, or Carolina, they probably say, organizing this bus tour and getting the right to water into the Constitution. So inspiring. And Myrna Greenfield, who is a woman from the UUSC, says that she's so astounded when she goes to this neighborhood, which she has seen over time. She says the neighborhood is still poor, but living standards have improved, and the people brim with a sense of pride and possibility. And that for her, she says, at a time when the political stalemate in the United States is forestalling efforts to create change, it was inspiring to me to see the impact that people organizing together can achieve. I thought of my colleagues in Boston who are campaigning to ensure that low-income people won't get their water shut off if they can't pay their bills, and wish they were with me here in Ecuador to hear about this remarkable accomplishment. So you can see this network of mutuality, this learning and inspiring that moves back and forth. We heard that Carolina says, learn to dream. This is the young woman who helped create this bus tour around the country. Learn to dream, but not dream by ourselves. We must learn to dream together, to share the dreams. Only in this way will the dreams become a reality. These problems of equitable distribution of resources are not new. In the Hebrew Bible, written over 2,500 years ago, we have words from the prophets who were decrying the inequities of their system, speaking up for the needs of widows and children, the most vulnerable members of society. These prophets were sharing their dreams that we still can read today. The Reverend Safford again. They described a world we can't always believe in, the prophets. Can't always bring into clear focus, can't quite rightly remember when we feel overwhelmed by the enormity of things. They imagined into being a time and place unprecedented, in which justice would roll down like waters and peace like an ever-flowing stream. They imagined into being a people who would do justice, enact kindness, and walk humbly. Not in a fantasy city, but in a real, just world. May we walk together toward a future where we are all fully nourished in body and spirit. I invite you to come and go with me to that land.